Hello, my name is Tracy Sinclair, and I would like to welcome you to this AAT podcast on supervisory and line management skills. This podcast focuses on the tools, techniques, skills, and best practices associated with managing other people. During this session, you will be asked some questions and offered some suggestions to help you to consider and reflect upon your own personal line management framework and skills, and how they may be improved. During the course of this recording, we will cover the following topics and areas. Understanding the manager's role. What are the main tasks and responsibilities? What practices, skills, and techniques can help to achieve them? Defining relationships with our staff. What sort of relationship should we have, and how do we achieve that? Managing performance. The process of performance managing, goal setting, appraisals and performance review, staff development, delegation and feedback, leadership and management, and performance problems. So let us start by looking at the role of the line manager. Good management starts with you. If you develop and practice good management skills, you are in a better position to achieve results at your organisation through others. It is often down to common sense, but sometimes common sense needs pointing out so that it can be recognised. There are dozens of detailed books and manuals on management, but what most people want are the practical skills. They want this not only so that they can do their job better, but also because the management role is crucial to the performance of the organisation. This is because effective and continuing collaboration between departments and employees helps an organisation achieve real competitive advantage. Take a moment to consider what role the manager plays. What tasks do they undertake? And what responsibilities do they have? Now think about practices and techniques that could be used to fulfill those tasks and responsibilities. Typical line management responsibilities can include some or all of the following: setting objectives, monitoring objectives and workload, development planning and training, performance reviews and appraisals, salary reviews, giving feedback, handling performance problems, and keeping your own manager informed. It might be worthwhile taking a moment to reflect upon what your responsibilities are as a line manager. In order to continue this process of reflection and consideration, you may also want to ask yourself the following questions. What skills do good line managers display? Which of those skills do I already possess? Which of them could I develop further? What are the features of a good working relationship between a line manager and their team? What skills do I already have in this area? Which aspects of building the right type of relationship might I struggle with? What steps could I take to ensure that I develop good working relationships? Who is someone that I believe is a good manager, and what is it that they do? Now that you have some thoughts about your own role and responsibilities, it may also be helpful to share and discuss this with your own line manager so that you can confirm clarity and agreement between you. In this way, your own manager will be able to support you much more effectively in your role. One of the major responsibilities of a line manager is to undertake performance management and appraisals. So let us take a look at this area now. The purpose of performance management and appraisal. Performance management is a two-way process of communication between the manager and the job holder, which should be ongoing throughout the year. It provides a means of encouragement, support, guidance, coaching, help, etc., to the employee and feedback to both parties. Appraisal is the process of reviewing the performance and development needs of employees at an agreed time or times during the year, as well as their potential for future promotion. Performance management and appraisal provide a framework for obtaining, analysing, and recording information about employees so that organisational objectives can be achieved, the running of the business can be improved, management can help improve employee performance as well as plan and invest in their careers. Employees are enabled to evaluate their own performance and so develop themselves. Existing skills and experience can be built on and skill gaps bridged. Training needs can be identified. Management and employees can contract together and produce achievable action plans. This process also provides an opportunity for management to take an overall view of work content, loads and volume, etc. So what are people's experiences of performance management and appraisal? Well, here are some views that abound. When I was appraised, I found it a waste of time. It's just a yearly chat. It's extra paperwork. More work when I'm already overloaded. It can get a bit too personal and painful. It's hard to find something positive to say. I get subjected to a lot of complaints every time. Staff are only interested in the pay. Just feels like a stock-taking exercise. It seems judgmental, like playing God. It's all subjective anyway. What difference does it make? And why bother? They should have a good idea of how they're doing anyway. These are actual comments taken from people's views on appraisal systems. It's true that a performance appraisal is not easy to do well. It can be difficult to deal tactfully and appropriately with poor performance, and equally hard to find the right way to praise good performance. However, when done well, it plays a very important part in developing employees as well as the business. So what are the benefits of performance management and appraisal? The stakeholders of performance management and appraisal are the individual, the manager, and the organisation. Each of those three parties have a vested interest in making it work well. Here are some of the benefits. The benefits to the individual include being praised, having clarity of objectives, knowing priorities, receiving encouragement and recognition, personal development with constructive feedback, opportunities for career development and greater job satisfaction, a sense of personal worth, progress, support and help, an opportunity to make constructive suggestions, a chance to voice views, to see the bigger picture and to feel valued within the organisation. The benefits to the manager include being motivated, committed, improving relationships with staff, enhancing performance of staff, better monitoring of workload, the generation of new ideas, the clarification of objectives, better job satisfaction, better decision-making, and better handover between managers. The opportunity to give recognition and support. The opportunity to spot talent within the team. And the opportunity to receive valuable upward feedback. And the benefits to the organisation include having a motivated workforce, a workforce with skill development, the achievement of organisational objectives, improved staff performance, good identification of training and development needs, leading to enhanced business performance, effective succession planning, fairness and equality, valuable input to assist salary reviews, improved monitoring of training needs, identification of skill gaps, and improved staff retention. Now let us take a look at the process of performance management and appraisal. There are four stages to this process as follows. Stage one is the business role. The individual should have an up-to-date job description, be clear about the job skills and knowledge required for that role, as well as the departmental and business objectives. Stage two is performance planning. Performance objectives, which are derived from and contribute to the business role, should be agreed. Stage three is performance development. The attitude, skills, and knowledge that are needed to meet the performance objectives must be defined clearly and a development plan put in place. Stage four is performance measurement, and there are two aspects to this. One is the ongoing monitoring of performance that provides feedback to stage two, i.e. performance planning, and the second is the periodic performance appraisal. Performance management and appraisal responsibilities. Who is responsible for what, and who should be involved in the process? Have a think about the various aspects and responsibilities within the four stages just described, and consider whose responsibility they are. In some cases, it is clear that they would be yours. However, in some organisations, your line manager and indeed the individual you manage may also be involved. What is the case in your situation? Think about how you intend to handle your people management responsibilities and consider whether or not it is appropriate for you to do some of the following. I will consider setting between 3 and 6 objectives for each of my line reports. I will discuss these objectives thoroughly with my line reports. I will check that individual objectives are relevant to my organisation's needs. I will encourage individuals to share information about their objectives with others in the team. I will arrange sessions to update objectives at regular and frequent intervals. I will be willing to renegotiate objectives when situations change. I will do my best to ensure that objectives are achievable, and I will clearly explain how success will be measured. I will ensure that I clarify my contribution to the achievement of their objectives. I will make sure that we meet regularly to discuss performance against those objectives, and I will use tangible and fair evidence to measure the performance. Remember, it is worth re-examining how you set and measure objectives. When these are done well, they are a vital way to help both individuals and the organisation to develop. As you have probably sensed by now, the effective setting of objectives forms the basis of good performance management. So let us now take a closer look at how to do that. The definition of an objective. A performance objective is a precise statement of what is to be achieved within a certain time frame, usually in addition to normal day-to-day duties, for example, a particular project or a report or a piece of work. It is like a beam from a torch on a dark night. It shows and lights the way ahead. It should be specific in terms of what you want done and when you want it done, so that you can decide at a later date whether or not it has been achieved. Individual objectives will vary in range and scope. Some will cover the daily responsibilities of the job and other duties that keep the work flowing properly at acceptable levels of quality. Others will relate to areas where specific improvements need to be made or new approaches developed. It is important, therefore, to determine the right balance between what we call maintenance improvement and development objectives. When the individual is a manager, their objectives should also balance people as well as task needs. The benefits of setting performance objectives are that they help employees to perform well in their job. They enable employees to contribute more effectively to the organisation's business objectives. They assist in developing employees' potential. They also promote continuous improvement and provide a set of goals in a complex work environment. They motivate employees by having a clear sense of purpose because they give direction and consistency. They form a great basis for planning and also a base for meaningful performance feedback. Cascaded objectives is the ideal, and they should start with the chief executive and board of directors, who set objectives for each individual director. These then cascade throughout the organisation to ensure that everyone is working to achieve the overall organisational business goals. What is the focus of an objective? The essence of an objective is that it defines where we want to go without describing how we are going to get there. For example, reaching the peak of a mountain. The focus should ideally be on the output from the objective rather than on the input of effort. Any objective could be very demanding in terms of the effort needed to achieve it, but the emphasis of the objective statement should be output orientated. For example, the result required and not how it will be achieved. Consider, for example, a salesperson's objective. An example of an input objective could be conduct a minimum of 10 sales visits per day to potential customers over the next 6 months. An example of an output objective would be increase sales by 20% over the next 6 months. By tackling sales performance through statements that are input objectives, there is no focus on the effectiveness of those visits, and so there may be no effect upon sales at all. A typical example of where people confuse the difference between input and output objectives is also in the area of the amount of time given to a job. The manager who notes approvingly that all the team stay until 6:30 in the evening is measuring an input. Note, all of the hours given to the job may not necessarily have been effective in achieving the desired output. It could even be that people are simply sitting at their desks trying to look busy while watching the clock and praying for the time to pass so that they can go home. The manager needs to set output objectives that define the goals to be achieved. Once reached, would it matter that a member of staff sometimes left early? Objectives will be discussed naturally during an appraisal interview when reviewing achievement and progress, areas of difficulty and development areas. It's best to stick to between 3 and 6 main objectives, which can be further broken down into sub-objectives, sometimes called targets or goals. Without objectives, employees don't know where to invest their time and resources, and so they can drift along in their jobs in a rather uncoordinated way. Without purpose and a sense of meaning, their commitment can also leak away. When objectives are unclear, it is impossible to make effective plans. They must therefore be clear-cut and not simply vague statements of intent. They can also be a mix of shorter and longer-term objectives. Now let's look at measuring objectives. To make objectives as effective as possible, it is crucial to have the right measurements in place, and these must be reliable and valid. How dependable and consistent is the information used to measure? Does the information measure what it's supposed to measure? Does it measure something that is within the job holder's span of control? Is it quite possible to devise and use a measurement that is reliable but not valid? What we call hard objectives use quantitative output measures. They may be referenced against specific criteria or compare to a norm. They are objective and can measure things like speed, deadlines, accuracy, number of errors, whether or not a task is achieved, number of complaints, number of processes completed or outstanding, the time taken to complete a process, or the percentage of budget either spent or saved, for example. It is important to consider whether the number of activities reflects their accuracy. Sometimes trying to do too many reduces the effectiveness. What we call soft objectives use qualitative output measures. They are harder to prove because they have a degree of subjectivity. Nevertheless, they are essential in most roles where people skills are part of the work remit. A measure such as having a positive attitude to customers needs to be broken down into behaviours that can be actually observed and monitored. For example, politeness, smiling at the customer, responding calmly to problems, not being rude to customers, not speaking critically of your organisation, and having a good knowledge of products and services that your organisation offers. Such objectives can be described probably using a tick list of desirable behaviours. With a clear picture of what is required, it is much easier to train or develop the individual towards the goal and provide helpful and specific feedback. Writing objectives. The mnemonic called SMART provides a useful tick list for writing effective objectives. You and your staff can set SMART objectives for anything relevant to their work, including the task, the management style, personal learning and development, attitudes and behaviours, etc. So let's have a look at what SMART is. The S is for specific. Express the objective in precise result terms, i.e. an end and not a means to an end, and state it in clear, simple language. M is for measurable. Include a performance standard, whether it's quality, quantity, resources, or time. When objectives are measurable, it is easier to agree later on what has or has not been achieved. Decide how it will be measured and monitored. A is for action orientated. The objective should use an action verb that describes activity, not something cerebral like know, appreciate, or understand. How do you measure if someone understands something, for example? A is also for agreed. It is important that objectives are discussed and jointly agreed with those undertaking them. The whole process of discussion up front increases commitment and ensures that the objectives are reasonable and that priorities are clear and understood. Agreement now avoids disagreement later. But if you can't agree, well, the final decision remains with you as the manager. With some people, it is sometimes useful to set objectives bottom up, i.e. to ask individuals to set their own objectives for you to then discuss and agree them later. R is for realistic. Does the individual have the ability, the time, and the resources available to achieve the objective you want to set them? Any objective should be stretching, but achievable, and will vary depending upon the person's capabilities. Objectives that are either too hard or too easy will very quickly demotivate. R is also for relevant. The objective should be relevant to the individual's job role. And finally, T is for time-bound. Always include target dates. Specify when the results must be achieved and don't leave an objective open-ended. Both parties need to know the deadline for getting things done. Here is an example. To ensure service requirements are met efficiently, with 95% of agreed service requirements being met within 7 working days by the end of June. Having looked at standard work objectives, now let us explore the identification of development objectives. The assessment of performance is the backbone of the appraisal process. It helps you to identify development objectives for the individual. A development objective is one which has learning as its primary focus. There are 5 main types of development objective. These are behaviours that the individual should either do more of, improve upon, do less of, start doing, or continue doing. The main sources of insight into individual development needs are the individual's self-assessment, your assessment of their strengths and development needs, an analysis of the individual's contributions from customer feedback, and measurement against company criteria, for example, organisational or departmental objectives. Having set the development objectives, now let's cover addressing the development needs. This is the how. If the development objective is, for example, to improve presentation skills, then the question must be asked, how will this be achieved? It can be helpful to create levels of objectives and break the task down into smaller sub-objectives or actions, which, when combined and completed, will come together and achieve the goal. So for the example of presentation skills, we could have some sub-objectives, which are to obtain feedback by showing a draft of my presentation to my boss first and getting some coaching from the training manager, to get more practice by volunteering to present the monthly report, to overcome my nerves by talking to a mentor and learning something like relaxation techniques, etc. The key is to take the original objective and ask how it will be achieved. Capture the answers as sub-objectives and then ask how again for each of those, and so on and so forth until you have cascaded the objective down to an appropriate level of detail and can comfortably move forwards with the relevant actions. Development needs can be met in a variety of ways. The task is to find the development activity that meets the needs of the employee within both budget and an acceptable time frame. The working environment offers endless learning opportunities if they are recognised and well used. The problem is that less formal learning projects are often harder to set up and maintain and can easily be overridden by the pressures of day-to-day work. To minimise the risk of failure, you can define clearly the learning or project activity and write it down. Make a contract with the individual covering their responsibilities, the time allowed, the resources, and the success criteria. Agree a schedule of learning review sessions. Don't be overambitious. Select activities that are readily achievable. Learning opportunities. Here are some examples of learning opportunities that you could offer to your team. Delegation. Assigning new or increased responsibility and accountability is a great way for people to learn and stretch their skills. Secondment, with a temporary assignment with new job responsibilities. Project, a temporary task with new responsibilities. A structured review of their work with in-depth feedback sessions. A job enrichment or enlargement project where wider tasks and responsibilities are included within the existing job. Mentoring schemes which involve discussions with an organisational aunt or uncle, someone who is very knowledgeable about the organisation's business. Coaching programmes involving detailed guidance on how to improve performance. Shadowing schemes, watching how other people perform in their role. Community involvement projects and online learning. Distance learning, using the computer at times to suit the individual and the workload, just like we're doing now, in fact. Let us now move on to consider the performance plan. A performance plan for each individual needs to be written up once the various objectives have been agreed. This can range from the objectives that have been agreed and the standards to be achieved, through to a full terms of reference for a specific piece of work or a project. The performance plan is likely to be different from a job description, which is a more broad statement of ongoing duties. The performance plan will need to be reviewed and amended as things change. Deadlines and standards should be altered. These prove impossible or too easy to meet. Keep an eye out for unrealistic targets or insufficient challenge. It is important to manage the plan well so that the individual is always clear on what the priorities and objectives are. It is therefore important to identify those priorities. In practice, this means creating a plan that identifies what is most important and urgent. A plan that is clear and simple and has deadlines contained within it. A plan that is spread over the period to reduce the risk of overload and stress, and includes some objectives that are easy and some which are more challenging. Think through carefully what you want the individual to achieve overall. This needs to be consistent with the company strategy and priorities established for your area by your boss. This might be difficult, but try to determine what is most important and where time and resources need to be concentrated. If objectives are not prioritised, then the individual may feel perhaps overwhelmed by what they have to do and end up procrastinating. They may avoid objectives for which they have less interest or motivation. They may also end up spending too long on one area and so neglect other areas. One way to be clear about these priorities is to use a matrix. Draw a square and divide it into four smaller squares with a horizontal and vertical line. At the outer edge of each line, starting at the top and moving in a clockwise direction, write important, urgent, not important, and not urgent. Then plot the objectives that you have set the individual in the square where you feel they best fit. Anything in the top part of the matrix may be important to the organisation or important to the individual. Items in the top right-hand corner must take high priority. And anything falling in the bottom left-hand corner should not perhaps be in the plan at all. From this, it should be simple to create a development plan for a 12-month period that is divided up into manageable chunks. Individuals should be able to do this on their own if given clear guidance. This will help them with their own time management and prioritisation system. And so finally, we move on to actually producing the plan. Write the objectives and agree success criteria for each. Identify the development opportunities. explore all the possible ways of achieving each development objective. Select the development activity. How will those objectives be achieved? And which option is best for the individual and the organisation? Agree timings and responsibilities. Who will be responsible? What resources are needed? And when should the objective be completed? Now let us take a look at collecting data and assessing performance. Why is it important to collect data? How will you go about collecting data for assessing performance? And what will you record? It's important to collect data because it's very difficult to recall and assess events that occurred in the earlier part of the year. The lapse of time tends to encourage an emphasis on the more recent past, and this can very easily distort the overall balance of how someone has performed over the year. You therefore need to keep a running record of the performance of your staff and of actual events that provide clear evidence of work performance. These notes will help provide an invaluable aid memoir in reviewing performance. How and what data to collect? Run regular ongoing team progress meetings to review progress, to adjust direction and priorities as necessary. Supplement these with ad hoc meetings when required. Your notes from these meetings may be very useful later on in the year. Use one-to-one progress meetings to check things out and to give feedback on performance. Some of these may just be short updates, while others may be more wide-ranging, in-depth sessions that maybe tie into monthly or annual reporting progress. Keep a progress file so that you can monitor how things are going at a glance. Gather items for your next progress meeting as you go along. Jot down topics as they occur to you and make a list of what you want to discuss with the person at the meeting. Encourage others to prepare for progress meetings in just the same way. Obtain regular reports on key measures of performance, for example, volumes, quality levels, costs, and so on, from each area for which you are responsible. Try to keep the paperwork to a minimum by using the information that your people are already using to help manage their own job. Keep a record of critical incidents, core successes, problems, difficulties, missed deadlines, points for particular praise and recognition, etc. Ensure that your people know that you want to be kept informed and are always available for help if things are not going smoothly or if they want advice or guidance. Remember also that a person's performance may not always be constant, and so we may need to assess our views on a variation in their performance. If the individual's performance varies from what you had expected, you'll need to explore the reasons for the gap and decide whether any further action is needed. Consider what you think might have caused a variation in performance from what you had expected, and be careful to seek out evidence to support your thoughts rather than just make assumptions and jump to conclusions. Let us review a few of the possible causes then of variation in performance. 1. Perhaps someone or something else caused the problem. For example, internal or external pressures caused an unforeseeable change in job requirements. Perhaps the person has received a lot of interference or disturbance in their work recently. Perhaps they have experienced a lack of cooperation from their colleagues or other departments. Perhaps the expected resources were not available. In these cases, ask yourself, did the job holder tell you, the line manager, about these difficulties? Did the job holder do everything possible to address the problem? Did you do everything possible to support them in addressing the problem? Another area to consider is that perhaps you, the line manager, have caused the problem. For example, Did you fail to clarify the requirements and expectations? Did you fail to give enough guidance and encouragement, support or information to the individual? Did you expect too much by setting unreasonable or impossible objectives and standards? Or did you arbitrarily change tasks or priorities? In these cases, ask yourself, has your management style affected the job holder's work? Did the job holder attempt to address the problem with you at the time? Were the objectives that you set clearly SMART? Another possible cause is that the individual caused the problem themselves, perhaps through working in a muddled way with no thought to their priorities. Perhaps they have been working with a poor or negative attitude to their work. Maybe they haven't been paying enough attention to detail or have been distracted from their work for some reason. Perhaps they're not being as much of a team player as you would like, or perhaps in fact there is an area of incompetence or skill gap in what is needed to do the role. And finally, there are some special factors to consider as well. Perhaps the person is doing some temporary service in a higher grade. Perhaps they are experiencing exceptional circumstances, perhaps personal difficulties at this time. Have they been off sick recently? Are they new to the job? So in these cases, ask yourself, have any of these particular circumstances or special factors affected their performance? And if so, is any action necessary? Remember, we may also need to deal with overachievement. How far above the requirements is the job holder's performance? How does their performance compare to others doing a similar job? And how can you reward that particular individual? Is it possible that they're in the wrong level of job? If so, how can you develop them to attain the appropriate level? And is that possible within your organisation's infrastructure? Now let's move on to deal with poor performance. Remember though, the main aim of a performance appraisal is to help people improve their performance. Any form of poor performance or disciplinary matter has no place in an appraisal and should very much be dealt with separately and in a timely fashion. Let us then consider the need for rules and for grievance and disciplinary procedures. Every organisation needs some form of basic rules of conduct. Often there are unwritten rules about standards of behaviour, and most of the time everyone will conform to these. Such basic rules might include things like timekeeping, adhering to lunch breaks, respecting company property, observing confidentiality, etc., etc. Standards will quickly deteriorate if no rules exist, or if they are vague, or if you fail to uphold them. Although you might need to review rules from time to time, they must always be clear and fully understood by everyone involved. They should provide an unambiguous set of work standards so that everyone knows exactly what is expected of them. It is useful to have an agreed approach for dealing with minor misconduct or poor performance. Your own line manager or HR representative is always your point of contact here. Colleagues in a similar management position can also be of help to you. The opportunity to talk over a problem with another manager rather than struggling alone enables you to pool your experience and knowledge. So in these cases, what are your management's responsibilities? A manager has four main aspects of responsibility, and these are 1. Establish standards of acceptable work performance and conduct for those in the team. 2. Uphold these standards consistently and without bias. 3. Nip any unacceptable behaviour or performance in the bud. And 4. Investigate any complaint about poor conduct or job performance thoroughly before talking to the team member about it informally. One of the major management challenges is dealing with misconduct or poor performance, because it can so easily become an emotive issue. In such cases, there is often a knee-jerk response, resulting in a quick fix with all its consequences of the disgruntled employee that follows. It is important that we deal with issues at an early stage. If there is an issue, have you ever spoken to the individual about it during the preceding months? Of course, you need to gather sufficient evidence to confirm that it is really a problem, but you must address the problem promptly. Don't bury your head in the sand. Others will be affected and your own credibility will also suffer. If you delay in dealing with an issue, you may then have an uphill struggle to enforce the standard, and the individual might say, "How come nobody has mentioned it before?" Often, poor performers can be turned round through timely interventions. If you deal with it early, you can often keep it informal and the behaviours will not become entrenched. Unless there are clear criteria and expectations of performance, then dealing with issues of poor performance can become very subjective, and you may shy away from dealing with mediocre performance until it becomes such an issue that the only solution is to move right through to a disciplinary process. Think about the practical steps that you can take to ensure new and existing employees are clear about what is expected of them and where, if applicable, their performance falls short. Unless you make employees aware of the areas in which their performance falls short, then there may even be claims of unfair treatment by you. Any subsequent disciplinary procedure is likely to be flawed, with an employee claiming that he or she was unaware of the problem, and you meanwhile become increasingly frustrated and unable to deal with the issue. This is when the emotions start to run high, and there is a danger that you will then make the wrong decision. So, to avoid this, here are some guidelines. Make sure that every employee has a clear job description, outlining the expected activities, as well as the attitude, knowledge, and skills required to do them. Ensure that every employee fully understands his or her role and the expectations of performance. Use the probationary period to guide and monitor the performance of the employee. Ensure that the employee is given the training they need in order to effectively carry out their role. Meet regularly to discuss performance and progress, especially during the early probationary period. Don't confirm an appointment if you have concerns about performance. Deal with issues at that stage. If you have monitored the performance and discussed it with the new employee during the probationary period, then non-confirmation of the appointment will be fair and reasonable. Exercise the option to extend a probationary period if you believe that the individual needs more time to achieve the required standards. If the probationary period is extended, then ensure that you monitor performance during this time and deal with any issues as they crop up. If, at the end of the extended probationary period, the performance is still not up to standard, then once again, non-confirmation of an appointment is fair and reasonable. Document all discussions and make sure that the individual always has a copy and understands them, so that the whole process is very clear and open and fair. When dealing with poor performance, if performance drops below the standards required, you must discuss it at the earliest possible stages with the employee. Gather the facts and information and try to remain very impartial. Ignoring concerns with performance will not solve that problem. Take the person aside privately and explain the issue in detail. Have your facts to hand. Agree where performance has been unsatisfactory and what needs to change. State the standard required and explore the reasons for the gap in performance. Listen and evaluate any reasons that the employee gives you. Develop an action plan with the employee to raise their performance to the required level. Clarify with them in simple terms what is expected and who to go to for help if they have problems. Give clear consideration to what help you can give them, for example, retraining, mentoring, job transfer, coaching, etc. Set a date to follow up and review progress with them. Adopt a positive approach with them and encourage improved performance with positive feedback to them. Consider whether changing the job content or moving to an entirely different job could help to improve performance, particularly if the main cause of difficulty is low ability. However, don't do this just to pass the problem on to somebody else. Note, if you intend a conversation about poor performance or misconduct to be an informal warning, you will need to explain this and that disciplinary action may be taken if no improvement is shown over a review period. Always consult your own line manager or HR representative who will guide you through the organisation's procedure and ensure that you take all of the steps to keep the process on the right track. Remember to always explain any appeals procedure to the individual concerned. This concludes the podcast on supervisory and line management skills. I do hope you have found this useful and thank you very much for listening.